Hey, let go!
The man who tugged Anya into the doorway released her and beamed, revealing a large gold tooth amid a mouthful of polished white ones.
American, yes?
She'd nearly struck him. She'd become so used to being threatened. But she'd caught herself and relaxed her hands.
A lovely day this is, American lady. A tourist, I can tell. I know tourists. I like tourists.
He was overdressed in a purple tuxedo so dark in the shadows it looked black, with lavender satin piping up the legs, and an emerald green cummerbund that bulged slightly with his paunch. He had makeup on. His long, narrow face was paler than his neck and hands. A little rouge was visible on his cheeks, and he batted false eyelashes at her.
How do you know I'm American?
I'm not your average crossbreaker, you know. I've got keen eyes. I can tell Americans. Besides, you don't have the look of a local or a pommy English. You don't have your chin tipped up to catch the better air, and you're walking alone. Americans don't seem to require company in the cross. Brave and curious the lot of you are. And since you're curious, you simply must come in and see the show.
Sorry, I have to make a phone call.
Hell, there's a phone in the lobby!
He pointed to the sign above the door. The Purple Pussycat. The headache that had started on the bus was getting worse. She could sit for a few moments, collect her thoughts, and then call Doug and the police on the payphone.
A spectacular show we have this late morning, and it's just about to start. You wouldn't want to miss the opening number.
How much?
For you, dear lady. Only $8.
And for everyone else?
$8.
This time he bowed as he gestured grandly to the door, the color of which nearly matched his tuxedo. Just a few minutes, she told herself, to rest her weary feet and to think. He opened the door and she went inside. Instantly, she was assaulted by more smells. Incense, perfume, fried potatoes, popcorn, something terribly sugary. They all warred for her attention. She went to the counter. It was stainless steel and glass, reminiscent of one from an old movie theater she'd attended once in a while near the orphanage in New Orleans where she grew up. An elderly woman with a heart-shaped face and a tired expression emerged from behind the popcorn machine.
Good day.
Hi.
Anya took in the rest of the lobby, hoping to find a bench to sit on, and seeing nothing but movie-style posters of women in flouncy gowns. She spied the payphone, an old thing, or perhaps it was made to look old.
One ticket, $8. Show's about to start. You best hurry to get a good seat.
Anya retrieved a $5 bill and three $1 coins out of her wallet, pausing to look at the face on the bill before she passed it over.
Popcorn? Iced coffee? Soda?
No, thank you.
Well, enjoy the show.
Anya headed toward a heavy curtain, above which a sign said auditorium. She'd collect her thoughts for a few minutes, try to lessen the pounding in her head. Then she'd come back out to make the calls. She looked at the time before going inside. On the wall behind the concession counter was a large purple cat with a twitching tail, its belly, the clock. Less than an hour had passed since the men had tried to kill her at the hotel. She pushed aside the curtain and let the darkness swallow her. It took a few moments for her eyes to adjust. She stood in an aisle that stretched between two banks of movie theater-style seats. The only light was what spilled out beneath the hem of the closed curtain at the stage down front. Her eyes picked through the shadows, seeing only a dozen other people inside an auditorium that could hold well over 100. Most of them were close to the stage. Anya selected a seat in the last row. The seats were upholstered in dark red velveteen, though some of the cushions had been replaced and covered with various colors of vinyl. She sat, trying to be quiet. She tipped her head back and closed her eyes. She breathed deep and slow, imagining a point of light in the distance and focusing on it.
Ugh. What did Oliver see? What did I see? What relic was so valuable someone would kill for it?
She forced out the sounds around her. There was only her breath now, regular and relaxing, almost hypnotic. She put herself in a trance and started to relive the past few days. Anya saw herself on her first day in Australia at the dig, thinking through what needed to happen. She had barely enough time to throw her bag in the hotel room and head out to the dig the first day. The shooting schedule was going to be fairly tight. Wes Michaels had told her that the local papers had done features on his group before, but they had not had any television coverage. It was clear from the beginning that he was dressing up a little for the camera. She'd spotted his wife cutting off the price tag from his shirt. Anya was pleased he bothered to buy something new. One of the first things Dr. Michaels and his wife had uncovered was still at the site because of its size and because the corporation funding the project hadn't yet decided whether to leave it there for posterity or bring it back to Sydney for storage. It was a carving of an ape, or something that looked like a squatting ape, taller than a man and as broad across as two, and chiseled out of a stone that had a high iron content.
The Egyptian god Thoth, probably. My best guess, anyway. 3,000 years old or thereabouts. Looks similar to one found in the old Wovey Road property some 40 years back. Folks scoffed back then, too.
Wes showed her a smaller, similar statue that Oliver shot as it was being crated up. It was badly weathered from time and the sea air, and she could barely make out the cross of life clutched in the ape's fingers.
Thoth was sometimes depicted as an ape. Then about 2,000 years after this one was made, they started carving Thoth as a bird-headed man. Like I said, Miss Creed, I'm not an Egyptologist, but I'm a damn good archaeologist. I know my stuff.
Well, I like you already with an attitude like that.
Jennifer had grinned at that and then handed an artifact carefully into Anya's gloved hands.
Our best find is a cross of life. Wes wasn't sure it should go on your television program, but I've talked him into it. Haven't crated it yet. Kept it out just for you.
Oliver was quick to record it, and Anya was equally quick to admire it. This cross of life, or Ankh, as some called it, was made of jade and had survived the weather and shifting earth that the years had heaped upon it. It was easily 3 or 4 pounds and carved from a single piece.
Beautiful.
In Toowoomba, years back, they found more than a dozen granite stones with inscriptions in Phoenician. I read that one translated roughly to here is the place to worship Ra or worship the sun.
30 years ago, a man named Gilroy found some Egyptian symbols scattered in with Aboriginal cave art, not terribly far from where an Egyptian sun disk was found carved in a cliff face. There was a faint outline of a chariot too, but you can hardly see it anymore.
And if you're talking about Aboriginals, there's records of a cult in New South Wales that worships Biame, a sky being. Biame has lots of parallels to Thoth. There's some Aboriginal rock art near Hawkesbury River that has some folks looking like ancient Egyptians. Fringe science, my arse.
Tell her the good part, Wesley, about Grafton. She might not have read about him. I'm sure she didn't have time to read everything.
Almost 80 years ago, there was an anthropologist from around here named Sir Grafton Elliot Smith. Found some remains in a New Zealand cave and said the skull belonged to an Egyptian. Said it was at least 2,000 years old. Grafton's papers were in the science library in Canberra, but they disappeared a few decades ago.
Anya reluctantly set the jade ankh in the padding material in the crate.
I hate it when important things go missing.
She replayed other things from the site. Carvings on pieces of pots and vases. An intact vase that was worth more than a tidy sum. Cow-headed figurines, simple tools, the skeleton. They hadn't dated those bones. What if the skeleton wasn't ancient? What if it was some murder victim? What if Oliver's disappearance and the attack on her had nothing to do with the dig? She mentally chastised herself for letting her imagination run so wild.
No, it has to be the dig. What did I see?
Again, her thoughts returned to the hefty piece of jade.
Definitely beautiful. One of a kind.
But was it enough to kill over just because she and Oliver had seen it? Anya shook her head, the gesture rousing her fully from her trance.
It was something else we saw, but what?
Shush! Do you mind?
Anya belatedly became fully aware of her surroundings. The theater was now almost full, and the pudgy, balding audience member in front of her glared balefully in her direction, then abruptly turned back around. On the stage, a woman in a black evening gown and impossibly high heels was singing and strutting and working a pink feather boa that must have been 9 feet long. No, not a woman. And lip-syncing, not singing. Anya finally recognized the performer as the same man who had invited her in from the street.
Excuse me, sorry.
She made her way to the aisle, feeling a little stiff from not moving in a while. Beyond the curtains, the lobby was lit brighter than when she came in, and a different woman was behind the counter. Anya stared. Different was right. The new clerk was a female impersonator dressed in plaid tropical glitter fabric square dancing dress and wearing an electric blue wig. Anya looked over at the payphone across the lobby. Someone was on it, talking and gesturing with her free hand. She could wait for that conversation to finish, or she could use the payphone at the end of the street. Anya paced in a tight circle, putting her hands under her armpits. It was chillier in the lobby than it had been when she came in.
What did I see? Or was it a who?
She stopped dead as a thought occurred to her. One of the men who'd attacked her, the tall one who'd been called Sute, was familiar somehow. She'd seen him before, and only now realized it.
He was at the dig.
Realizing for certain the attack was directly related to the dig, and thinking of Wes and Jennifer and the others at the site who might be in danger, Anya decided she'd have to call the police before trying to reach either Oliver or her producer again. She knew she couldn't even try to call Wes. There were no cell towers out at the dig. Another shiver rippled down her spine, only partly from her insight. It was actually cold now, and it occurred to Anya that she was going to get colder if she couldn't get back to her hotel for more clothes. She eyed the concession stand again, seeing the jacket they had tacked on the wall with a sales sign next to it. She walked back up to the counter. Tangerine Dream smiled at her as she approached.
What can I do for you, darling?
That jacket. I'll have one of those. A medium, please.
Tangerine nodded and pulled one out from a cabinet and accepted Anya's credit card. Anya breathed a sigh of thanks that they accepted plastic because the price tag, $60 in American dollars, would have practically emptied her wallet.
There you go, love. You are now officially fabulous.
Anya couldn't help but return the cheeky grin as she shrugged into the jacket, finding the shoulders a perfect fit and the sleeves just a tad long, but there were elastic bands around the wrists. It was, of course, purple satin, and the shiny metallic threads and seed beads on the back spelled out Pussycat. A smaller logo was embroidered over the breast pocket. It was lined more heavily than a windbreaker, and reasonably well made for a wearable advertisement. Still, it just looked tacky, and was something she intended to leave behind when all of this was done.
Good and warm. Thanks.
She zipped up the jacket and turned, just in time to see the woman on the payphone finish her call. Anya darted over and grabbed the receiver, even though there was no one else in the lobby to contest her for it.
Hello? I'm calling about the bodies that were found at the Sheraton on the Park Hotel this morning. No, you don't understand, sir. I'm not a news reporter looking for a quote. I was there. Yes, that's right. I was there at the hotel. No, I'm really not a reporter, honest. I'm a witness, almost a victim, actually. I was shot at, and I did not speak with the police at the scene. Listen to me, please. Can you transfer me to one of the officers working on the case? I know that they might be either at the station or still at the hotel. Sergeant Griffith. Yes, that will be fine. I'd like to speak with Sergeant Griffith. Thank you.
Anya fidgeted. 1 minute passed. 2 minutes. She looked at the pussycat clock. She turned back to stare at the number pad on the phone.
God, I don't have time for this.
Anya slammed the receiver down, deciding a trip to the police station was a better alternative than listening to hold music for who knew how long. A trip to the station was in order, right after she returned to the dig. If the men had indeed tried to kill her because of something she'd seen, it was possible Dr. Michaels and his team were also in danger. Anya bolted from the purple pussycat and stopped in her tracks on a dark, rain-slick sidewalk bathed in neon lights. Quite a few hours had passed since she'd stepped in for the late morning show. In her trance, she'd fallen asleep. Dozens of thoughts swirled around her head. Oliver, the police, Dr. Michaels, the Jade Ankh, the tall man she recognized from the dig site.
Sute, who the hell were you?
She'd spotted him shortly before they left the site, when she'd walked up the ridge to get Oliver. He was getting a distance shot of the student dig, and Anya looked through the camera to see it closer. Sute was there, with three more men who might have been her attackers. She only recognized Sute because of his height and lankiness. There were others at the dig, students, and an older gentleman, small, who might have been a teacher. Another fellow who stood apart from the rest. And there were tents, indicating that, like Dr. Michaels and his archaeologists, the students stayed at the site overnight. Despite the rain, the cross was crowded. Not a surprise on a Friday night when most big cities bustled. It was hard to tell the tourists from the locals now, most of them wearing a raincoat or carrying an umbrella. Across the street, two lovers huddled under the overhang of a youth hostel. They were locked in a kiss and ignored passersby. Someone paused under the awning near them and appeared to look across the street directly at Anya. There were too many shadows to see more than his outline or to be really sure if he was looking at her. Maybe he was simply standing out of the rain and waiting for a cab. But she had the sensation that she was being watched, an unpleasant tingling that she'd come to recognize as a precursor to trouble. She took a step forward, considering crossing the street and getting a good look at the man, but a car drove in front of her, and when it had passed, the man was gone. Maybe she could find a policeman walking a beat here. Maybe he could put her through right away to this Sergeant Griffith. Maybe Griffith would call Oliver's fiancé and deliver the unfortunate news. Maybe he already had.
They're looking for me. The cops and the bad guys. Sheesh.
Anya forced the sounds and sights to the back of her mind and brought her most urgent concern to the forefront. How could she get out to the dig? Renting a car was the only option. A four-wheel drive would be best. Likely, most of the rental car places were at the airport, so Anya would have to take a cab out there. She started looking for one. Instead, her eyes lit on a black cherry-colored Harley Davidson night train. It gleamed in the lights of a trendy bistro. Expensive in the United States, and even more expensive here because of import fees, its owner must be someone reasonably well off, she guessed. She couldn't just steal it. Shouldn't, she told herself, no matter how desperate she considered her situation. Still, she headed toward it. The bike would solve her transportation problem and would get her out to the dig. It could travel the off-road part of the trip better than an average car. A minute later, she was standing beside it, fingers stretching out to touch the leather hand grip.
Hey, get away from my bike!
Anya released the hand grip, skittered back a step, and bumped into a rangy young man in a black leather jacket, chains hanging from epaulets on the shoulders. She put him at 25, maybe, his face lineless and his dark eyes wide and bright. She was tall, but he towered over her, at least 6'4", she guessed. His head was shaved, and he had a tattoo of an angry-looking gargoyle on the right side of his forehead, the tail twisting down and getting lost in a bushy eyebrow that was pierced with a thin silver hoop. A small diamond stud pierced his nose, and larger diamonds glittered on his earlobes. He had on black jeans and black leather chaps. But his shirt was a pale shade of rose that added what Anya thought was an out-of-place splash of color. He looked her up and down for a moment, then relaxed slightly.
Oh, sorry, I thought you were going to steal my bike or something. Didn't mean to bark at you. I'm overly protective of my precious there.
No, oh, that's okay.
Anya attempted to radiate innocent, non-bike-thieving vibes. The biker squinted and cupped his hand over his eyes, showing a gold pinky ring set with a diamond that was at least 3 carats.
I recognize you.
Anya sagged. First, the odd-looking girl on the bus, and now the tall, bald biker decorated with diamonds.
You're from Chasing History's Monsters. You're Anya Cree, the archaeologist. I watch your program all the time. I'm addicted to the History Channel, Discovery, National Geographic, you name it. Can I get a picture of me and you? That'd be ace.
He grinned broadly, and without waiting for her answer, he turned to a middle-aged man behind him, also wearing a leather jacket.
Get a pic of us, Nate. This is Anya Creed.
The fellow had a tousled mop of dishwater blonde hair and looked put off by the request. The bald biker sidled up next to Anya and hesitantly put his arm around her shoulder. He was polite, careful not to squeeze her or seem too friendly. Nate produced a thin digital camera from his pocket and shook his head. He took four pictures from slightly different angles and replaced the camera.
Dark out here, and even with the flash, there's no guarantee. We're going in. Bet Max has been waiting for half an hour already.
The bald biker shrugged at his friend, then stepped in front of Anya, still grinning.
Ah, thanks for letting me get a pic. So you're here filming something, right? I mean, not in the cross, but here in Oz, filming something for TV.
Finished yesterday.
He touched his thumb to his chin and looked thoughtful, as if he wanted to keep engaging her in conversation but wasn't sure what else to say. She noticed he had tattoos on the fingers of his left hand that were made to look like rings.
Listen, sir.
Dariush.
When he saw her raised eyebrow, he grinned wider.
It's Persian. My mother traces her roots back to Persia. It means ancient king. Friends call me Dari. You can call me Dari.
Nate was frowning and looked from Dari to the bar and back again, finally folding his arms in front of his chest. Anya wondered if they were a couple. Nate's t-shirt was pink and had five lions sprawled in the center, all of them male. The pedestrians had stopped moving and crowded around them, some of them taking down their umbrellas so they could get a better look. Out of the corner of her eye, Anya saw two men at the edge of the crowd. They had dark complexions, and something was familiar about the one with the broader shoulders. Dari slid a step to his left, so he stood directly between Anya and Nate.
I think my favorite segment was the one you did on the Goat Suckers of Mexico. I caught it in reruns, too, then I ordered the DVD.
The Chupacabras?
She'd made no reference to goat suckers on the segment, but guessed that's what he was talking about. She kept her eyes on the two men, who appeared perturbed that they'd been bottlenecked on the sidewalk. Still, she thought they could have gone around by going into the street.
Yes, that's it, the goat-headed vampires of Chilpancingo. And then there was the show you did on...
The man with the broad shoulders pushed himself into the middle of the crowd. Anya held her hand out like a traffic cop stopping cars.
I'm sorry, I'd love to talk, Dari, but I'm in a terrible hurry and...
Oh, sorry, no worries. I didn't mean to tie you up here. Getting drenched out in the rain and all, catching a cold. Probably got to go home now, you're done filming, and I...
No, we finished shooting the segment here. I have to get back to the site.
She swallowed hard and opted for a shortened version of the truth. She moved so close to Dari that she could smell his aftershave.
Look, I have to get out of here now. Right now. It's important. Some of the people I interviewed yesterday could be in danger and I can't call them. My cameraman is missing and some very bad people are after me. I can't tell you any more than that.
Anya lost sight of the broad-shouldered man, but his companion remained at the edge of the cluster. She felt for the sword in her mind, ready to summon it if necessary.
I didn't mean to hold you up, Miss Creed. I hope no one gets hurt. Thank you for stopping, though. The pictures...
I'd like to borrow your Harley, Dari. I need to get out there, like I said, to the site, and...
Huh?
Please trust me. I just need to borrow your motorcycle for a little while. I promise that I'll...
The other man was forcing his way into the crowd, too, his dark eyes locked on hers, his mouth in a tight line. She couldn't see his hands. Was he carrying a weapon? Suddenly, she spotted the broad-shouldered one. His face was lit by a blinking neon beer sign. He was one of the men on the sidewalk outside of the hotel who had shot at her. She was sure of it. She knew she had to be careful, or a lot of innocent people could get hurt. Dari gestured to the bike.
Hop on! I'll take you wherever you want to go, Anya Creed.
He made a move to get on the bike, but Nate grabbed his arm. Dari shook him off.
Where the hell are you going, Dari?
Later! Come on, Anya. I said I'll take you.
He sat astride the bike and leaned forward, giving her plenty of room to get on. The two men were stalled as some people in the crowd pushed back, not wanting to give up their spots so close to a celebrity.
No, let me rent your bike. This might not be safe where I'm going, and I'll not jeopardize you. I'll give you 50 now, and when I return, I'll give you more.
I don't let anyone drive my precious here, and I've only ever let Nate ride on it before. But for Anya Creed, come on. If you're in such a hurry and you don't mind getting a little more drenched...
The two men shoved the people directly in front of them, and the gathering on the sidewalk surged forward, just as a tall man under an awning gaped at the oncoming menace.
He's got a gun! Anya threw a leg over the bike and grabbed Dari around the waist.
Move it, now! North of Sydney, that's where we're going.
Anya's fingers dug into Dari's jacket. He reached to the right side of the bike, pulled the choke lever toward him, and turned the key. Anya looked over her shoulder, just in time to see the two men reach the curb, the people parting around them in panic. She thought they'd shoot at her, but Dari, seemingly oblivious to the threat, eked around a double-parked car and whisked them out of sight. Anya noted the bike's controls, the front and rear brake levers, the throttle, and the engine cutoff switch. The ignition was in the center of the steering column. It would be easy for her to run it. She noticed that there was less than a quarter tank of gas. They'd have to stop soon, probably before they were out of the city. And she'd talk him out of the bike then by talking some sense into him. Dari wove in and out between sluggish cars, the drivers of which were slowing to look at the various sights in the neighborhoods surrounding the cross. Anya's hair was plastered against the sides of her head by the time they'd crossed the bay and left the harbor sights behind. Dari chose a four-lane route that ran past North Sydney, Neutral Bay, and Crow's Nest. The traffic was heavy. Then he took a two-lane road that went through Northbridge and near Willoughby.
Nate's gonna have the wobbly boot on before the night's out. Told me he was gonna drink a whole bottle of Bundy to celebrate a promotion. But he won't be drinking with the flies. Max is supposed to be there. Someone will give him a ride home, though, no worries. Fear might touch you in the morning, me leaving him there, but he'll get over it.
A stretch of road opened up where the traffic was lighter, and Dari accelerated evenly, tickling the drivetrain and showing off his skills and the bike. As the road turned, Dari leaned left, practically closing the throttle, then opening it again on the straightaway and accelerating again. He used the brake when the rain suddenly picked up and the bike sluiced through a puddle. Anya had to admit that he was good and began to rethink whether she'd talk the bike out of him at the gas station.
Ah, it needs petrol. But there's a servo over there on the opposite side of the road. I should have brought my helmet or at least a hat, eh?
He pulled up to the closest pump, which was under an aluminum roof. He turned off the bike and pocketed the keys, ran a hand over his head, brushing the water off. Dari pulled out his wallet.
I've got a card.
Anya shook her head, droplets flying from her hair and pelting him.
This is on me.
She'd briefly entertained letting him gas up the bike and then riding off on it when he went in to pay, but she decided not to separate him from his precious and to continue to take advantage of his good driving. She got her card out and inserted it into the pump as Dari pulled the handle over and put the tip into his tank.
Think I can get your autograph later, if the rain stops and we can find someone to ride on?
It's the least I can do.
Dr. Hammam perused the memo on his desk. For your approval, it said, meaning he needed to sign off on it if he accepted the course description.
Please mark any corrections in ink and initial. Egyptian Archaeology, Faculty of Arts, 8 credit points, Department of Near Eastern Archaeology, prerequisites, 12 junior credit points in Classical Civilization, Ancient History, or Archaeology. 4 hours of lectures per week, assessment, 2 one-hour tests, 2 two-hour exams, 2 3,000-word essays. This unit provides an in-depth introduction to the rich and varied cultures of ancient Egypt. It includes the regional impact, engineering developments, religion, and death practices. Doesn't it always?
Doc retrieved a pen from a wooden cup on his desk, signed the memo, and tossed it in his out basket. He didn't care what they listed in their course brochure. He would not be there to teach it. As a visiting professor from Egypt, a native who traced his ancestry back to the great Khufu, or Cheops, or Sufis I, as some referred to the ruler, Hammam had agreed to his lucrative 3-year posting for far grander reasons than to educate dozens of doomed youths. If everything went as planned, he would not need to fulfill the rest of this year, and he could get about his real business. He would miss some of the students here. More than that, he would miss being in the field north of Sydney and getting his hands dirty in the sifting trays. But Hammam was 60, and as time moved ever faster, he vowed to spend less of it on academic pursuits and more of it on his efforts to join with the gods. The chance to unearth Egyptian relics had lured him here,
tugged him from his comfortable estate on the outskirts of Cairo. He wouldn't have come had it not been for the fringe digs local archaeologists worked and that the esoteric archaeology websites detailed. He had wanted one of the sites for himself, and the easiest avenue to that had been through the University of Sydney. He'd made that part of the condition of his temporary employment here, that he be put in charge of the university's tertiary dig in the forest preserve. Hammam liked Sydney. He'd visited the city several times, first when he was fresh from his doctoral program in Egypt and on holiday. He'd used his credentials to visit the records area of the Science Library in Canberra, where he carefully procured Sir Grafton Elliot Smith's papers on a 2,000-year-old mummy Grafton had discovered in New Zealand. Hammam had acquired other important relics and reports then, and on subsequent visits as well. He knew where to spread money around so that financially strapped curators and security guards looked the other way. Hammam had been born to money, and he didn't hesitate to spend it to get what he wanted. Occasionally, he left a body in his wake, but he was careful no finger of blame was ever pointed in his direction. He would never be traced to the cameraman who had been incinerated, nor could they link him to the upcoming deaths of Anya Creed and his students. Hammam was a very cautious man. His office was just off Science Road on the university campus, even though archaeology was placed in the Arts and Ideas division. He'd requested this office, one of a half dozen vacant for him to choose from, because it was the most remote of the lot. The bulk of the university was spread to the south of him. There was little traffic here in comparison to the other campus streets, which were busier and more brightly lit. Hammam listened to the hum of white noise that was almost too soothing. He found himself drifting off. He shook out his hands and unbuttoned his jacket, thrust two fingers between his shirt collar and his neck to help loosen his tie. Little activities to rouse himself. He much preferred the more casual dress of the dig site, but he'd just come from dinner with the Vice Chancellor and the Dean of Graduate Studies, and so he had to wear his best.
Oh, bother.
The night janitor for the building loved classical music and played it when he buffed the floors, loud enough to be heard over the infernal machine he pushed down the hall every third night. At least the racket would help to keep him awake. Hammam decided he would not grieve at the night janitor's demise. He turned his attention to a series of photographs on his desk. The first showed the slab that John had uncovered that morning. Hammam read the inscribed text.
The snake bit two times, and because of the snake, the mighty one of Lower Egypt has left the living. We are trapped here, our boat damaged beyond repair, so we must go forward.
He looked at the next picture, of a slab uncovered earlier.
The snake struck, and we gave yolks from lizard and bird eggs and prayed to the Hidden One that our ruler might live.
Hammam knew this predated the other slab in the story. The next picture was of a damaged slab, and it described the burial of the Egyptian who had brought his fellows to Australia.
We walked to the chamber where there were stones from all around. The chamber was properly aligned with the western heavens.
He tapped his finger on the edge of the desk, trying to fill in the gaps where the rest of the story had broken away with the chipped slab.
Something about three doors to eternity, a royal tomb, and a holy offering.
He gathered the pictures and put them in the bottom drawer, beneath a stack of file folders.
Enough of this. Maybe John will find more for me to translate tomorrow.
Hammam grimaced and stared at the crack under his door and waited until the shadow of the janitor and his machine passed across it. Hammam stretched forward and reached for the phone at the far corner of his desk, tugging it close. From a narrow drawer, he pulled out a personal directory and searched for the numbers he wanted. Pizza, the entry read. He pushed the numbers on the phone.
Junko, this is Hammam. I want to make sure that the tanker truck has been secured. Good, good. We may need it sooner than originally planned. Yes. Goodbye.
He depressed the receiver button and started dialing again, this time to a number at an entry labeled Sister, though Hammam had been an only child. He didn't worry that it was an international call, and that the department head might remind him that personal calls made from the offices were to be local, unless it was an emergency. Hammam considered this an emergency of sorts, and anyone who might object to this expense would not be terribly long for the world.
The test will be conducted soon. Nearly all is ready. And if things go as planned, Cairo will be next. Are you clear?
He replaced the phone in the cradle and stepped to the narrow window. The other offices he could have selected were larger and had bigger windows that opened out onto a usually bustling campus. He drew back the shade. It was raining softly. The lights were dim on this side of the building and reflected ghostly off the wet concrete.
Cairo next. Then I will have what I need to join the gods.
For a few minutes, it looked as if the rain was going to ease off. Anya hoped Dari would really open up the throttle then and make better time. But lightning flashed on the horizon, turning the black sky gray because of the frequency of the strikes. The wind gusted at the same time, sending the rain sideways. Dari, obviously a careful driver, slowed the bike and kept to the middle of the left lane. They'd left the outskirts of the city, and when Anya glanced behind her, she could see only a thin haze of twinkling lights, reminding her of fireflies floating to the ground in a farm field. Anya was soaked to the skin and knew Dari must be equally miserable. She remembered that he mentioned her catching a cold when they'd stood on the sidewalk in King's Cross. At the time, she thought the rain not even a mild annoyance. Now she thought that a cold could be a good bet.
Oh, smells like someone lost their lunch. What a pongo!
A putrid odor rose all around them. Squinting, Anya saw a great expanse of mud to the west, some field that had been liberally spread with a sludgy fertilizer. She wrinkled her nose and gripped Dari tighter when the bike slid across the center lane and then came back again. It amazed her sometimes how strangers could be so helpful and considerate, like Dari leaving his evening of partying to take a stranger to a place she hadn't yet divulged, and in a nasty thunderstorm. She'd have to pay him back for this, maybe send him a set of autographed DVDs from Chasing History's Monsters. He'd probably like that, and it was the absolute least she could do. They'd traveled 30 miles, and they basically had the slippery highway to themselves. After another 10 miles, the rain finally stopped. A car raced up from behind them, spraying water from its wheel wells and splashing Dari and Anya as it passed.
Ah, next bloke does that, I'll give him a gobful!
Anya saw another car behind them, this one keeping its distance and following them as they changed lanes. For a heartbeat, she wondered if it carried some of the men who'd shot at her, like the two on the sidewalk in the cross. After another mile, the car faded back and took an exit. Another few miles later, the bike lurched and nearly pitched them to the pavement.
Ah, shit, hang on!
Dari caught it and took the brunt of their weight on his left leg. He and Anya got off, and he walked the bike to the shoulder. He fiddled in a small pack at the back and produced a thin, stunted flashlight that he flicked on and held between his teeth as he knelt by the bike and ran his fingers over it.
What happened?
Dari looked at the engine. His fingers worked quickly and carefully, and soon he was shaking his head, the gesture bouncing the light across the black cherry bike. Finally, he took the flashlight out of his mouth and turned it off.
My precious is cactus. At least for the time being. Damn connecting rod broke and went through the cylinder wall. Fixable, sure, but not right now, not out here in the night. Cactus it is. I didn't bring a cell phone.
I don't have one either.
So we walk. I figure we'd gone, oh, I don't know, 65, 70 clicks, maybe a little more. Certainly more than halfway to wherever it is we're going.
To an archaeological dig in a forest preserve.
The Egyptian one.
You know about that?
Yeah, I said I was a history freak, and I subscribed to Archaeology Today, and I've bookmarked all the esoteric and fringe sites. Been by it one day, several months past. Not much to look at, though. There was an article in one of those local papers. The site down in Brisbane is further along, and there's a lot more to see there.
Dari stuck the flashlight in his pocket, and then pushed the bike farther off the road, and behind a row of scrubby bushes, where it couldn't easily be seen from the highway. He walked back to Anya and eyed her, a speculative look on his face.
So, why do you think the archaeologists are in danger? They find something. Something that the wrong sorts of people might want bad enough to kill for, eh?
I don't know. Everything seemed fine, but this morning my cameraman goes missing and I find three guys trashing my room. When they saw me, they started shooting. One of them said something about me and Ollie seeing something, but I have no idea what he was talking about. I tried to call the cops, but I got the runaround on the phone. I think they're still following me, some of those guys from earlier, and I have no idea what's happening at the dig.
Wow. Well, let's head north then. There's a couple of small whoop-whoops ahead off an exit and,
A couple of what's?
Whoop-whoop. You know, a small town. You say some fellow's from whoop-whoop, and you know he's from a place you seppos, Americans, call the Sticks.
Whoop-whoop.
So we walk to a whoop-whoop and call someone to come get us and get a garage to come pick up my precious. No worries, eh? I got lots of friends in the cross. Some of them don't get pissed on Friday nights. We'll get you right out to that dig somehow.
Thanks, Dari. I mean it.
After about 30 minutes of walking in the dark, Anya thought she saw headlights on her 40th look over her shoulder.
Hey, look.
Oh, great, a lift!
Dari had flagged down a pickup. It was a white Toyota Hilux that was rusted in spots. The sign on the side read, Brumby Paint Company, Parramatta, NSW. A thin, rangy man poked his head out of the window and looked at them.
Oi! What you two doing in the road this time of night?
My bike broke down, mate. Give us a lift. Nearest town, maybe?
Actually, if you could drop Dari off at a whoop-whoop and take me north of here, say to the forest preserve, I would be ever so thankful. I'll give you a 20 for your trouble.
Both of us to the preserve, mate. I'm not leaving you alone in the wilderness, Anya Creed.
Yeah, I'm going past the preserve, but it'll cost you 30.
He leaned over and held out his hand, and Anya produced three damp $10 bills, scowling to note that she was nearly broke now. He stuffed the money in his front pocket and crooked a thumb to the bed of the truck.
I'll drop you off there if you want. An odd pair, the two of you. I'd ask what you were doing out here in the middle of the night, but I'm not sure I want to know. Right, back there with the both of you. Don't want you getting my cab wet.
Anya and Dari climbed in the back and wedged themselves between cans of paint, folded canvas tarps, and two extension ladders, all of which were wet. Anya noticed that the driver had rolled up his windows and locked both of his doors.
Dari, you really don't need to tag along. I wasn't kidding when I said this could be dangerous. I'd prefer not to worry about myself and you.
There might be no problems at this dig, you know? Then you'd have nothing to worry about. Things would be all apples.
But if there is...
I'll keep my head low on you. Some of my friends are planning a birthday party for me next weekend. I'd prefer not to miss it. And I can well look out for myself.
You really don't have to.
Yes, I do. Wouldn't be right for me to leave a lady in distress, you know? Besides, if this turns all exciting, I wouldn't want to miss it. I'll have quite the tale to tell. Maybe even be a part of history rather than just reading about it, you know?
Sorry about your bike. I know bikes like that are terribly expensive here and...
No worries again. I can afford it. I own three op shops. Opportunities shops. I guess there would be thrift stores to you. Took out a loan for the first one when I turned 18. Folks thought I was touched, but I paid the bank back in less than a year. There's first-rate money in second-hand goods. Thinking about putting up another one, building this one from scratch. I can well afford that bike, and to fix it. Even Nate can't complain about it. People tell you not to make your boyfriend a business partner, but he's sharp about managing the shops. We're doing great.
The truck finally slowed and pulled to the side. The driver rolled the window down as Anya and Dari climbed carefully out of the back.
Here you go.
Can't you take us a little farther north? To one of the main roads into the preserve?
Out with you. I was good enough to bring you this far. Enjoy yourselves in the woods.
He sped away, leaving Anya and Dari staring at a narrow, muddy road that led into the trees. It was dark and unmarked and looked entirely eerie.
Surprised he saw this. If my bike hadn't went belly up, I could have got us to a better spot. Taking us right in there. It's going to be a couple of clicks hiking to the dig, you know?
There was just enough starlight that Anya could see thick ruts from tires on the road.
Someone else found this road, too. Look there.
Recent. Maybe there'll be some of this trouble you're worried about. Hey, why didn't the police come out here with you? What with you getting shot at and all, being a celebrity and worried about the archaeologists? You think they'd have driven you out here in a divvy van, lights all the flashing?
Their receptionist sucks.
What?
Checking her bearings, Anya realized they were on the side of the preserve with the Michaels site. So while she'd have to cut through the woods to get there, at least she wouldn't have to climb the ridge in this darkness. She started jogging, her feet slapping against the mud in time with her heart. Dari shook his head and hurried after her. The road, if it could be called that, was not one of the main routes into the preserve. It wound its way, slick like a wet snake, through white stringy bark trees, and then ended at a rusting service shed. Parked outside the shed was a black SUV, the vehicle responsible for the tracks Anya had spotted. The SUV glistened in the moonlight. The water beaded up on it as if it had been freshly waxed. The cloud cover had all but disappeared, so she could easily make out that no one was inside it and that the shed was padlocked. Still, she crept closer to the SUV just to be cautious, holding her hand behind her to indicate that Dari should stay back. Anya felt the hood, and while it wasn't warm, it wasn't as cool as the air around her, suggesting that the SUV had been there a little while, but not terribly long. She peered in through the windows, unable to see much, but noting that it didn't look lived in. There were no empty soda cans or paper bags, no napkins or maps stuffed above the visors. Very neat and very locked, with a security light on inside that indicated an alarm would howl if she jimmied a door open. She studied the ground. Besides hers, there were two sets of prints, both with pronounced grooves to indicate hiking boots.
This doesn't look like an archaeologist's car to me.
No, it doesn't. It's pretty new. And pretty expensive. A rental. See the sticker?
Dari pointed at a small decal. She squinted at it. The words were lost in the darkness, but she recognized the shape of the logo. Anya doubted one of the crew would have rented an expensive SUV to drive out here.
Not good.
A bad feeling, eh? Which way from here to this dig? Like I said, it's been some months since I was out here, and it was daylight then.
Not sure. We took a different service road to get out here.
Anya studied the boot prints again, and then started following them. A strong breeze rattled the tops of the trees, sending drops down from the recent rain. Hardy beetles fell on them too, and Anya carefully brushed them off. The tracks led down a narrow path, likely a game trail made by deer and wild pigs, Anya guessed. Where the path became thin and almost non-existent, the men did not walk single file as she thought most would. One walked to the right of the path, smashing ground cover as he went. Definitely not one of the archaeologists, she decided. All the people she'd interviewed at the dig site professed a love of this preserve and would not have been so careless.
That's love grass that one's traipsing through. Plume grass over there. It's a little different.
Anya wondered if he was trying to impress her or was just babbling because his nerves had kicked in. She wished she'd talked him out of coming along, even though she appreciated the company. If the tracks she was following led to some of the men who'd shot at her, she would need to call her sword. And Dari didn't need to see that.
Hard to see it, not much light, but that's kangaroo grass to your left. And there's some love creeper. Looks like it's dying back a bit. Likes the heat. Love grass, love creeper. Lots of love in this place.
Anya didn't hear the things that she wanted to. Sounds of insects that could take the fall chill. Owls and small animals scuttling along the forest floor. It could be that she and Dari had unnerved them, or that the men they were tracking had spooked them into silence. They hadn't traveled more than another dozen yards when she lost the tracks. The game trail disappeared, and thick ground cover spread out in all directions. She pressed on, angling toward where her inner direction sense suggested the dig was. The moss and wet leaves were soft and springy. She could tell that even through the soles of her tennis shoes. And it was slippery. She had to move a little slower than she'd like, just to keep her balance. Through gaps in the ironwoods to her right, she could see a stream, the moonlight glinting off its surface and making it shimmer like molten silver. Something splashed in the water, and she stopped and listened. A fish or a frog, she decided, finally continuing on. Eventually, she came to a bend in the stream. It was wider and the current fast. More like a small river, Anya thought, the bank swollen slightly from the night's downpour. A log stretched across it, and from scrapes in the bark it looked as if something or someone had used it as a bridge. Maybe the men from the SUV. A search of the bank confirmed that. She spotted two sets of boot prints. Anya saw Dari eye the water uneasily.
Still want to come along?
No worries. I'll go first.
He removed his leather boots and held one in each hand as if using them to balance him.
A mite cold this is. Slippery, too.
In the moonlight, she could see his toes curl around the wood, as if he'd had some gymnastics training in his youth. Dari certainly is an interesting soul, she mused. Yet for all his smoothness, the log swayed beneath him. He took a half dozen steps and stopped, steadying himself and waiting for the log to stop quivering before he took another half dozen. She waited until he was nearly across before she took her turn, keeping her shoes on. Indeed, it was slippery, and for a heartbeat she expected to fall into the churning water. But she slowed her breathing, as she'd learned in her martial arts training, and she closed her eyes and relied on her feet alone to carry her across. Anya felt the log wobble too, and at the same time sag. It was rotting from all the moisture. Once on the other side, she waited for Dari to put on his boots. Then she was quick to find the tracks again and follow them. The ground was uneven, and roots from the stringy barks poked up here and there. There were gullies hidden by the ground cover.
Ow! Crap!
Anya picked herself up before Dari could help, and she tested her ankles. The right one was sore. Sprained, maybe. She'd be able to tell after she'd walked on it some more. In some places, the ground cover was so thick and high that Anya had to push her way through it. The men had come this way, too. She found prints in the rare, bare spots of ground.
They're going to Dr. Michaels' camp.
I should have brought guns along. Mate told me I should buy one for the op shops. When I take the money to deposit, I think I'll buy one when I get back.
Ahead, the trees thinned and mist rose from the clearing. She walked faster, feeling a slight burn in her leg muscles from the exertion, and a stronger burn at her right ankle. She checked for tracks on this side of the fog, and then looked for them again after she had passed through.
Nothing. I've lost them.
There were pieces of moss-covered shale, and in the moonlight she expected to see where patches had been smeared from someone walking over them. It was as if the two men had vanished, but Anya knew that wasn't the case. She considered redoubling her efforts and asking Dari for his flashlight. But it would take a considerable amount of time, and reaching Dr. Michaels was more pressing. She got her bearings and pointed toward a tall copse of white stringy barks.
I'm pretty sure the camp is over there. It shouldn't be much farther.
Oh, hope not. Not used to all this walking. My feet hurt, my legs hurt. Hell, I'm aching all over. I can't turn back, though. I'm not tin-arsed. I'll get myself lost. Besides, I might miss all the good stuff, eh?
Anya shook her head and turned her attention back to the ground. It niggled at the back of her mind that she'd lost the tracks. She didn't like that she had enemies around and couldn't tell where they were. She knew with certainty the men were up to no good, or else they wouldn't be here on this sodden night.
Come on, let's move.
The forest spread away to the north and south, as if the trees had come upon an imaginary line that they were not allowed to cross. It was a natural break in the woods, Michaels had explained to her on the first day of her visit. There'd been a few trees cut down for the site, but only a few. This extensive clearing hadn't had anything grow in it for centuries, he'd said.
I think I see a light.
Yes. Look, it's the campsite.
The tents were large and elaborate. There were five of them, one more of a canopy than anything, with tables under it for sifting and arranging artifacts. A dying fire burned in front of the nearest tent. Anya stared at the fire, caught up in a memory that wasn't hers, and a shiver traveled down her back. Dari nudged her.
Everyone's sleeping.
Not for long.
Wes Michaels sat cross-legged on his cot, staring at Anya, unmindful that he was dressed only in pajama bottoms. His wife had thrown on a robe before allowing company in. Both husband and wife looked stunned from Anya's news.
So you think we saw something? Or uncovered something so valuable someone would kill for it?
I don't know. All I know is Oliver is missing, I've been shot at, and I'm pretty sure whoever these people are, they're on their way here.
It was dry inside the tent, save for right around the tent flap where the breeze still gusted and sent a little water onto the rug. Anya took off her jacket and hung it on the back of one of the chairs. Her ankle was sore, but she was pretty sure she hadn't sprained it. Jennifer frowned in thought, then looked at Anya.
That jade ankh. It's the most valuable piece we found. I wouldn't want to guess at what it's worth, but it's not here. It was crated up yesterday and sent to the city. If thieves come looking for it, they'll be disappointed. But maybe the men who shot at you don't know it's not here.
Anya closed her eyes and pictured Sute again. She remembered being on the ridge with Oliver, looking through his camera and seeing Sute with the others.
No, the more I think about it, the more it seems that it's not what I saw, what Oliver and I saw, but who we saw. I can't shake that notion.
Wes uncurled his legs and set his feet into moccasins conveniently placed by his cot.
And you think maybe Jin and me and the others saw this person too? Oh, you've not had that many visitors lately, Miss Cree, just you and your crew.
Can't imagine us seeing anyone who didn't want to be seen. Least of all, anyone who'd want to kill us for seeing him.
No one came out here tonight?
Well, just you, Miss Cree, and...
Wes looked to the dripping biker, and Dari grinned at him.
Dariush, I own 3 op shops in Sydney. I'm thinking about building another one.
How'd you get mixed up in this?
I gave her a lift out here. Well, a part of the way. A painter in a truck hauled us most of the rest.
Jennifer stretched to a camp stool that served as a nightstand and looked at the clock.
That sounds like a story. It's almost midnight. How about we bunk the two of you in with...
I can't even think about sleeping.
Anya rose and reached for her jacket, seeing that it was snagged and the embroidery ripped, no doubt from the tree limbs and bushes of the preserve. Strings of seed beads had come loose, and there were paint speckles on the back of the right arm. She put it on.
I'm going to check the other camp.
The Unis? Girl, it's almost midnight, and that's a good trek up that rise and over even in broad daylight. Not that it's all that far. The rocks just aren't all that friendly.
Anya offered them a slight smile and shrugged.
You have a satellite phone here, right?
Well, yeah.
Keep it close, in case you need to call someone if there's trouble. And you've 2 security men, right?
In their small tent by the sifting trays.
I'd wake them up, put them on alert. They've got guns, right?
Yeah, they do.
Good. The men who were after me weren't terribly good shots, but they had plenty of guns between them.
Jennifer paled at that. She reached over to grip Wes's arm.
Wes, maybe we better call someone. Get some police out here.
Cell phone's been out of juice for almost 2 days now. Ma's gonna pick up another charge, eh? Shoulda. Always putting off trips to the city.
I'll be back after I check on the university site.
Dari made a move to rise, but Anya shook her head.
Stay here.
I don't need protection.
But maybe they do.
She nodded to Wes and Jennifer and parted the tent flap. Dari reached in his pocket and tossed her his flashlight.
Here. Not much, but it might help.
Thanks. I'll be as quick as I can.
Anya left the tent, hurrying toward the ridge. She did not look back. Otherwise, she might have seen 2 dark-clad men in hiking boots skirt the camp and head toward the far southern tent. Anya climbed the ridge that stretched like the spiny backbone of some beast between the 2 dig sites. Still, the slick rocks made her cautious, and so she paid attention to selecting her hand and footholds and kept her mind strictly on the task. There was an easier way up the ridge, one she and Oliver had taken yesterday, but that would not give her as high a vantage point as she wanted this night. The shoulder where she'd been grazed stung. Her ankle bothered her too, and she was careful to put most of her weight on her left foot as she pushed herself up to the next crevice. She looked down, the moonlight showing nothing but upthrusts of rocks, and at the edge of her vision, the tops of the archaeologists' tents. The tent canopy that covered the artifacts and sifting tables looked like some giant bird with its wings spread, water pooling and making part of it sag. She couldn't see anyone moving about, but despite the moon, it was too dark to see much directly around the tents. She climbed higher, hoping Dari hadn't decided to come protect her. He seemed athletic enough, but unless he had climbing experience, tackling this section of the wet, rocky ridge would be a bad idea. Looking over her shoulder again, she saw only the light and shadows of the ridge. It wasn't until she'd nearly reached the top a few minutes later that she felt prickles of apprehension dance across the back of her neck.
Dari? Wes?
Anya scrambled to the top and waited. Someone was following her, and she would meet whoever it was up here. A part of her hoped it was Dari. She fervently hoped it wasn't Wes coming to help. He did not strike her as terribly agile, and she worried that he might fall. A heartbeat later, she learned it was neither man. A dark-clad stranger pulled himself up on the ridge a few yards south of her position and crouched, arms to his sides to balance himself. He had on something like a ski mask, so that only his eyes and part of his nose showed. He didn't blink as he regarded her.
What is this about?
What is this about? It is about your death, American fool. Kelba, it is about your painful and quick death.
He made no move to approach her, wanting the advance to be hers. Anya sensed the sword just beyond her reach. She was anxious to call it, but she held back, knowing that when it appeared, the time for talking to this man would be done.
Why must I die? Why do you need to kill me?
Because my master commands it. You, Kelba, you bitch. Because you saw...
Saw... him?
A flash of the stranger's eyes confirmed to Anya that it was a person, not a thing, that she'd seen.
And he didn't want to be seen, your master. At least not by a television crew that could inadvertently send his picture into people's living rooms. That's it, isn't it? All of this is about Oliver taking a man's picture.
My master prefers secrecy. To be anonymous, pretty Kelba.
What about the students? Do they have to die too?
Everyone dies, Kelba. No one escapes such a fate. You, however, will sooner than them.
Did you follow me from the cross?
Yes.
Wasn't it enough that you killed Oliver and took his cameras? No one else can see your master now. You have all the evidence.
He shifted from his left foot to his right when the breeze gusted stronger. Anya's anger kept her from feeling the cool wind. The sensation of the hilt teasing her hand was becoming more pronounced, but still she kept the sword at bay.
He begged for his life, I was told. The American with the big cameras and the blue eyes. He did not suffer much, I was told. There was no need for undue pain. There was only the need for his eternal silence.
The man finally shuffled toward her a few steps, anxious that she was not coming to meet him.
You do not need to suffer either. You need only to die.
If she leaned forward, she could reach him with the sword.
Where is Oliver's body? At least give me that much.
Such knowledge would do you no good, as you will soon join him.
Anya sliced him across the chest. His blood speckled her face. He held a hand to his chest, as if trying to keep the blood inside him.
I'll give you one last chance to tell me where you put Oliver.
Where did the sword come from, Kelba? No matter. I can kill you anyway.
He reached to the small of his back and retrieved a gun. Anya lunged again. He fell dead at her feet, and the gun clattered down the side of the ridge and out of sight.
Kelbe, in al yawmak.
Anya spun to face the second man as he clawed his way up the ridge.